We're going to dig in on one issue that's expected to be a focus in the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Brett Kavanaugh. State lawmakers will be interested in how he responds to questions about Roe v. Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision that gave women the constitutional right to choose abortion. Any change to that decision could give states first say in how to regulate abortion. Across the country, lawmakers and activists on either side of the debate are preparing.
We're going to spend time now in two states looking at the past and thinking about the future of abortion policies. First, Kansas, where the trend among lawmakers is to weaken abortion rights, and later Massachusetts, where there are efforts to strengthen them. Madeline Fox of the Kansas News Service starts us off.
30 years ago, abortion wasn't hard to access in Kansas. The state legalized it in 1969 alongside a wave of others. Today, it looks a lot different. Since then, Kansas has passed laws that impose a 24-hour waiting period for abortions, require parental consent, mandate an ultrasound, and restrict insurance providers in the state from covering most abortions. And it all goes back to the summer of 1991. That's when one Wichita clinic got the attention of an anti-abortion protest group called Operation Rescue.
Approximately 8:19 a.m., Dr. Tiller's attempt to enter the clinic.
Dr. George Tiller was one of several doctors nationwide performing third trimester abortions. That work made him a lightning rod and led to his assassination 18 years later by an anti-abortion activist. But that summer, the group bussed protesters in from around the country that July. And for nearly 2 months, from morning to night, thousands gathered at the clinics, linking arms and singing, praying, chanting, trying everything they could to keep women from getting abortions.
The choice is death! That's the choice!
But behind the scenes, some were already making plans to translate the protests into long-term political change.
Every night they would have rallies back at the Wichita Plaza Hotel.
Judy Thomas is a reporter who was at the Wichita Eagle in 1991.
At the back of the room, they had long tables and, you know, they were signing people up to run for precinct committee positions.
Mark Geetson manned a table. And during the day, he was out at the protests with his three-ring binder, signing up anti-abortion protesters to get involved at the most local level.
They were ready to come out with the pitchforks, but it's much smarter to do it within the law. You don't have a revolution when you have a constitution that allows you to elect who you want.
The next year, 1992, moderate Republicans started losing their seats to more conservative anti-abortion challengers running for the state legislature.
They were out of the pews, into the streets, and then into the political arena.
As anti-abortion politicians found their way into the state house, Kansas started to move from the country's late-term abortion capital to a leader in abortion restrictions.
You really started to see them, you know, anti-choice laws come into play in 92, 93. And then we've seen a mountain of them since.
Julie Burkhart worked at one of the clinics targeted in the summer of 91. Today, she runs a clinic on the site of Tiller's old practice, one of now only two such clinics in the whole state. Burkhart and other abortion rights activists tried to hold back the tide, but they were outflanked by anti-abortion groups who were thinking ahead, building off the seeds of those 1991 precinct captains.
You talk about grassroots. I mean, we have true grassroots.
Mary Kay Culp is the head of the anti-abortion group Kansans for Life and says it wasn't really until she had her own baby that she became an activist. When abortion became legal in the state in 1969...
That's the year I graduated from high school. So I knew a few girls that had had abortions that first year, and I saw what it did to them mentally, spiritually, just, you know, everything.
Her organization has been working hard on legislative victories and races for statewide office. But right now, the future of abortion in Kansas rests with the courts. The state Supreme Court heard a case last year on whether the state constitution guarantees a right to abortion. Culp says the ramifications of that could be huge.
If they find that there is this, quote, right to abortion in our state constitution, we could lose every single one of the laws we've passed that have cut abortions in half here.
So if Roe goes and the Kansas Supreme Court upholds a right to abortion, activists like Culp are hoping they can fall back on decades of work in local and state politics to keep Kansas one of the most abortion-restrictive states in the country. For NPR News, I'm Madeline Fox in Topeka.
And I'm Martha Biebinger, reporting from Massachusetts, where a Republican governor, a state legislature controlled by Democrats, and legions of activists are taking steps to secure, even expand access to abortion.
We need to show the rest of the nation that Massachusetts stands with the right to choose and stands for progress.
That's State Senator Cynthia Cream urging her colleagues to repeal a mid-19th century abortion ban that was likely unenforceable but was still on the books. The repeal cleared the legislature with little opposition, and Republican Governor Charlie Baker scheduled a public ceremony to sign the bill earlier this summer.
Given the context at the federal level and the ongoing sort of intensity of the debate about some of these issues in D.C., we simply felt that we should just clean up the state's books with respect to these issues and resolve them once and for all.
Now, abortion rights advocates in Massachusetts are focused on easing parental consent rules and making pills that trigger an abortion more available. Rebecca Hartholder, who runs the group NARAL Pro-Choice Massachusetts, says these changes will benefit women in the state and could make Massachusetts a destination for women from, say, Kansas.
We are making an assumption that if women can travel, that they will come here for safe care. So I do think it's a fair thing for us to be thinking about with the specter of Judge Kavanaugh looming over us right now.
The president of Massachusetts Citizens for Life, Ann Fox, dismisses the flurry of activity at the state capitol as a lot of political theater.
It's part of the effort to gin up all the work that's going on against Judge Kavanaugh. When you scare people, that's the best way to get them to do something.
Fox is right. Fear about losing access to abortion is fueling phone banks, letter-writing campaigns, and compelling some to tell painful stories, like this one from Karen and Robbie Silverman. It starts at 8 a.m. on a summer morning just about a year ago, when the Silvermans arrived at Newton Wellesley Hospital, just outside Boston, for a 20-week checkup.
We were pregnant with our third child. We were expecting a little boy and blissfully ignorant that everything was fine.
Until the ultrasound showed major heart defects that would require a series of high-risk surgeries beginning immediately after birth and eventual heart, liver, and kidney transplants. The Silvermans consulted teams of doctors at two different hospitals. Karen Silverman says all the diagrams and studies made the decision clear.
It just felt so obviously right to me of what the kind, compassionate, loving thing to do for him was, and to not have him go through this very short life full of suffering with no real joy or happiness.
The Silvermans did not need special permission for a 20-week second trimester abortion in Massachusetts, for which Robbie Silverman says he's grateful.
We absolutely understand that there are people who are in our situation who would make a very different choice. I don't think we question anyone's personal morality or the personal decisions that they would make, and we would ask that they not question ours.
But the Silvermans do hope their story will help secure access to abortion in Massachusetts and across the country. For NPR News, I'm Martha Biebinger in Boston.